we go.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
I'll just have to tell them I'm not a thief, just a pervert.
I flashed a 70-year-old woman.
Bingo! Showtime!
So you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a limousine tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a Lincoln bat. But the Joe Link, go direct to DLNGS.org. And ICChallengeAnalytics.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the gala's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 923 of the Link Sling Tech Show. On the show tonight, we got Pat.
How's it going, man?
We got Joel.
Good evening.
And Joe will be joining us shortly. He's on call. So he'll be here in a few. I guess we can continue talking about the great news that is the return of OLF.
Yep. It says here, and this is kind of confusing, because at least the subject, I think, is confusing. It says, Ohio Linux Fest reemerges for a hybrid conference, Open Libre Free. Now, I don't know if that's, like, the entire name of the conference now or what, but it's going to be December 3rd and 4th, 2021, and it's going to be both an in-person with they're limiting attendance, understandable with the unknowns of COVID right now. They're also, this is the assumption that the City of Columbus technically has a mask mandate right now. So if that's still in place, then you will have to wear a mask for the show, just in case anybody cares. It looks like it's going to be... They're going to have some live session talks. They have right now the call for proposals is open. They have elements for turning to in-person experiences, OLFI, expo tables, birds of a feather, and the hallway track, of course. They will limit attendance for greater personal space. Catering and food services will be planned for those who wish to partake. I already mentioned the masking.
They're looking for about 300 guests.
Yeah.
Is what they're saying.
Yep. So they'll follow all rules, regulations set forth by the state of Ohio, Franklin County Health Department. Global Bio Risk Advisory Council. Oh, that dictates the Hyatt safety protocols. Integrated Columbus Convention Center policies. So my guess here is that with them canceling last year, they probably lost their November slot, so they had to take the next available, which was probably December 3rd and 4th. Possibly. I don't know. I know for at the early part of the pandemic, they actually, of course, Convention Center was completely shut down, and not just shut down, but they set up a, where Comic-Con was?
Yeah.
A few years back, that was completely set up as like a COVID overflow. All right. So they have beds and stuff in there, and fortunately, they didn't have to use it. So. Very fortunate on that, but because I know I have a friend she works for the convention center. She is like the operations coordinator or something like that. So I don't really talk to her about stuff, but I just know she works down there. So, but I knew a lot of kind of a little bit of the inside of what was happening down there because she was sharing pictures and stuff last year. So. I'm more excited. I'm kind of excited about it. I'll see how I feel about it as I get closer. I may decide to go. I might just do virtual, or I might just not at all. I don't know at this point. Can't really say. It's a weekend, so no big deal for me to just go down if I wanted to, unless the family decides they have something. So.
Yeah, there, if you go to the OLF website, olfconference.org, there's a survey there that I guess they're posting, and they would like to know, I see there's one question on it. Well, maybe there's more than one question. It's basically, you know, a little survey. They want to know if you want to attend and what you're interested in and stuff like that. So if you are interested in going to Ohio Linux Fest, I mean, there's an option in here that says, if you want to take the survey, you could do unlikely to attend whatsoever. So I really don't know what the point of you filling out the survey if you're not going to attend. But there you go.
Well, I think I might be in there, to kind of gauge whether they should have it at all, because a lot of them are.
I guess the thing is, if you're going to fill out a survey and the options are in person only, and right. I want to attend OLF in person only, in person and virtually, virtually only, unlikely to attend whatsoever, or unsure.
They're actually missing one on there. Never mind. In person and virtually.
Yeah, I would be like, well, what's the point of filling out the survey if you're not going to attend whatsoever, virtually or in person? Either way, I mean,
right.
If you want to gauge if there's interest, I mean, if you're looking to have 300 people and 600 people said they would attend, then you probably have a decent, opportunity to get a third, maybe a quarter to third or half of them or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what the return rate is on surveys like that for this. I mean, I would assume that if somebody says they want to come, they probably show up if they say they would plan to.
Mm-hmm.
What do I know?
I'm interested.
Yeah, maybe.
I'd be interested too. It's a rough time. Like,
yeah, it's a thing.
At first,
though,
I was
like,
December, a lot of people have off and stuff like that. But it's at the beginning of December.
That's not true.
But then if it was at the end of December, then that would be like competing with the holidays. But if it was, that's a tough one. Like, but then at the same time, it's most older people are out. And by older, I mean like, college and most older people that are in college, they wouldn't be in school. But then you still have, if you have a parent, you still probably have kids that are in school, which makes it difficult. I don't know. Is there any good time of year if you have all those situations you got to contend with?
Not really. When you think about it.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, it's all going to depend on, I don't think, we'll see what it looks like by December. I think I have to look and see if last I looked, I thought that the spike was starting to calm down in here in Ohio. But, I'm not aggressively worried about COVID, I'm in a unique situation, of course, too, because I work at home most of the time anyway. So it's like, other than like the occasional gastrointestinal thing, I've just never been sick in the last year and a half or so. I've been really lucky with that.
Uh-huh.
But then, like I said, I work from home all the time. I don't go out in the public except for, maybe once or twice a week. This week might be the exception, if it's not pouring down rain tomorrow, I might go. There's a metro park nearby. I might go over there and take my camera and take a hike. But, but generally, though, even like pre-pandemic, I would try to schedule, pick a time for the going to the grocery store when there's not going to be a lot of people in it anyway, just because people are assholes. Usually, So, I mean, it's one of those kind of deals. It's just like, I always did socially distance anyway. Especially if we were planning on going to someplace like an amusement park or something, I always would want to go during the day, and during the week, not on a weekend day, because it's always crazy busy on the weekends. But my case is for OLF, You know, I probably wouldn't take any extra time off work necessarily. Unless there was a specific session on Friday that I would even be interested in. I never attended much of Friday anyway. I was always a Saturday day.
I might go. We'll see.
Yep. Yep. It just depends on how much it costs to fill up the rig, huh? But that's like now. See, my son's car still on her, still showing that stupid red light on the dashboard, the engine light. So they'd replace the sensor on Monday with the GM part. Light still came back on, and so the guy at FireSense as well. At this point, you know, it could be possibly something in the timing chain. They don't really know, and at the point they're at, they couldn't do any more work on it anyway. So I call up our dealer, because we technically do have a warranty through the loan period on this car. Yesterday, best day I can get is September 21st when I called in. The best day I can get is October 4th. And then when I drop it off, it could be 3 or 4 days before they have it fixed. So it's like, it's the labor in certain fields, the labor is just completely down. You know, some of it is people. I don't think it's people that don't want to come back, because you know a lot of people want to put the unemployment stuff on that and say that's why. Well, you know, I don't think that's entirely it, especially in Ohio. I think in a lot of cases, people who had a shitty job at like some place like a Taco Bell or something, when they couldn't go to work at all, they had to find another job, and they ended up finding a job that was even better than Taco Bell. And do you really want to go back to Taco Bell if you've got a better job? Hell no, right? So that's why, you know, people that would have still been working there today if there hadn't been a pandemic are choosing to work elsewhere where they're not treated like shit.
Dun dun dun.
So it goes down to the auto body auto shops too, but so there's also the parts issues too with auto. And I drove past the there's a Chevy dealer right by my house, like not far from the house. Drove past it, and their lot usually has a ton of inventory. Not now. Hardly anything in there. So things are still kind of screwed up right now. We shall see.
Kind of waiting for Joe to come back, because I have a topic I wanted to talk about. I have something, but I want his, you know, I want him to be able to weigh his opinion on this too. But nevertheless, while we're waiting for him, I'll give an update on my the problem I address I brought up last week, and how frustrating it was working with a certain company's support. We're still waiting for an answer. It's been this must be really baffling them. One of the interesting things I found, to reiterate, we have three and now a fourth one being added, functions, cloud functions, and the way that they operate is it is a function that runs, or an application that runs on the service that they provide, and there's different ways to trigger it, and in this case we're triggering it through a messaging service that has a push subscription. So when the message gets put onto the topic, it's automatically pushed to the function. Function picks it up and then acknowledges the message, which takes it off the subscription and processes it. And as I said before, there's two ways that it works. if it is, the function runs, it's either successful or not, and it acknowledges the message when it picks it up, or if the function is slated to retry, if it fails, it will go and keep continuously retrying the message until it succeeds. In that case, the message will not be acknowledged if the function fails and retries are turned on. So it should only theoretically acknowledge the message when retries are turned on if the function succeeds. So in our case, the message sitting up there for anywhere from a few minutes to 10 minutes, but not all of them, just a few. And the more functions that we add, the more that we're seeing this, the more traffic those functions get, the more that we're seeing this. And what I'm seeing is there's three scenarios here. And the interesting thing is when we presented this to them and we're like, we just want to know why it's taking certain messages anywhere up to like 10 minutes to be processed. What's going on here? And on our end, we have these functions are pretty well coded that should there be any exception or error, we would be aware of it because it would log that. And that would appear in a log. So we've looked at this and analyzed it every way we possibly could in these multiple applications, that it would be really bizarre if only these groups of messages, and what we're talking about is, like, typically it's a few seconds for the function to run and process the message. And we're interested in why some of them are like a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And so it'd be really weird if these things were airing out and ending up in a loop and then eventually successfully completing and not having anything in our logging. And there's absolutely no indication that this is going on. So we managed to get, when we did get their support, we managed to be able to, they informed us, hey, why don't you do this? Why don't you grab the published message time, which is in the metadata, and log that out. And you can see if you take the published message time, which is when the message was put on the topic, and you subtract the current timestamp, which is when the function at some point should have started, you should be able to get a general idea of how long the message was on the queue and when the function picked it up, when it was pushed to the function and picked up. So what we were seeing is what we kind of expected, was that it wasn't that the message was being picked up and it was airing out and eventually it succeeds. It was that the message was not being picked up by a function until that time. So whereas it should be picked up almost instantly and processed within a few seconds, it was anywhere from, like, you know, the things that we're looking at, the outliers, are 1 to 2 minutes up to 10 minutes. So what happens at the 10-minute mark is the subscription will push the message again to another function, and that hopefully should pick it up. So we ended up with three scenarios that I looked at. They came back to us and said, hey, we're passing it on to our specialist support. We're waiting to hear back from them. And I said, okay. But in the interim, what I have found, interesting things, is that it doesn't seem like the messages are being picked up until that time that we see that it's no longer in the queue. And also, I found a situation where messages were in there for more than 10 minutes. And at the 10-minute mark, it was picked up and processed. But if I take the message ID and I look back in the logs, I can see that 10 minutes prior, the message was picked up, was processed by the function. It was never acknowledged in the queue, and after 10-minute deadline hit, it was pushed again and reprocessed. But that wasn't consistent across the board. That was only for like these certain three images or three messages that I found on one day. I looked at another couple of them, and that wasn't the case. So then today, after they had come back and said, hey, we're still looking into this, it appears that for some reason the function isn't getting or not picking up the message for that period of time. And then it's being, after 10 minutes, it's being pushed again and another function's picking it up. And I said, okay, you know, that's great, but they're not reading the entirety of my message, like what I'm posting again. So I said, look, there's three scenarios here. There's the first scenario is a message is in there for 10 minutes and it's not, it has to get repushed, it seems, and then it gets picked up and processed. So the second scenario is a message is in there for a message is in there for less than 10 minutes, but it's still like taking 3 or 4 minutes and it hasn't been processed prior. It's just for some reason it's not picked up for anywhere between 1 to 10 minutes. And then the third scenario is a message is picked up, processed, it's not acknowledged, it sits in the queue and it gets pushed again after 10 minutes and then it gets acknowledged. So those three issues there. It's really, really bizarre behavior. It's not consistent. I'm really excited to see what they come back with. It's also interesting to note that it's like, it seems like what we're working with and what it's kind of a new technology is falling in between the crack of here is kind of like two things that they've been running for a while, and then when you bring those two great things that taste great to by themselves together, you get your chocolate and your peanut butter and nobody knows what's going on. You know what I mean? It's like, why isn't this working the way one group expects it to work or the other group expects it to work? Now they kind of have to come together and figure out where they have a problem, because I don't think it's on our end. Right, Joel? It's not on our end.
Sure.
But ideally, it would be nice if we could have had this solved like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago when we posted the problem. So it's holding up a lot of work. Like, it's holding up work that I need to get done. Because one of the interesting problems is, yeah, because one of the situations is like in their best practices for these functions are like if you enable retry on the function, it's going to continuously retry until you you successfully exit the function or 7 days passes, right? So if this function is erroring out, like if you have an error in your function, the message and it errors out and it's never going to succeed, you're going to end up in an infinite retry loop and it's just going to keep going and going and going until like 7 days passes. And obviously you don't want that. So in their best practices, they're like, well, then what you should do when you enable this is you should enable an escape type factor in there. And what they recommend using is look at the publish time or whatever it is that you're doing. So if you start this function and it's failing and erroring out over and over and over again, so it doesn't retain states between function runs. So you end up in, you know, like when the function runs and it errors out, it doesn't know the next time it runs that it errored out before. So there's no retained state between function runs. It just keeps continuously trying to do that. So what you need to do, they recommend, is say, okay, look at like the publish time like we're doing. And if it exceeds a certain amount of time, then, you know, throw an error in your log and successfully exit out of the function so it doesn't keep retrying continuously. And that makes sense, but not in our current situation where, you know, it could take up to 10 minutes for that message to be acknowledged. So ideally, I would look at this and say, given that our functions should only take a few seconds to run, and it should pick it up almost instantaneously, even a minute, giving it a minute time period, I think is too much. Like maybe 30 seconds would be the max I would want to put on there and says, hey, after 30 seconds, if this thing hasn't successfully completed, and that would be an assumption of giving it like 5 seconds. So figure 6 runs. If it's not going to complete after 6 runs, it's probably not going to complete. Exit out. But now for this to adequately address all the problems that we're having, we'd have to set it for like 11 minutes or so. And at that point, that's an excessive number of runs, given that this thing should complete within a few seconds. And typically, if it does throw an error, that should happen like in 1 to 2 seconds. Like it's going to happen like right away. So it holds up that kind of work of implementing best practices. And I don't like it, Joel. I do not like it.
I don't either.
Yeah. So I got to spend the week, past week, Fastly, which is a caching CDN type service. Well, not CDN, it's a caching service. They came to us back at the end of August and are like, hey, we're implementing this Fastly Academy for getting people up to speed on our product, and we'd like to see if you guys are interested in beta testing this for us. So we'll give you a couple of subscriptions. You guys for the month of September can come in and you know, do the Fastly Academy, what we have available for free. All you have to do is give us some feedback. So I've been going through all their stuff, which has been pretty informative and an enjoyable experience. Learning a lot. Some of it's just review, but good stuff over there. Fastly, like I've said in the past, caching service, it makes use of Varnish, if you've ever heard of Varnish. Fastly is built upon an older version of Varnish that they have extended, and now they've taken, you know, branched off of Varnish from a little while ago and added their own stuff and provide a service around it. So it's pretty good. And I'm still waiting for Joe to show up for this other topic, but
he may be like my lately things have been nuts lately with tickets coming in, but
yeah, maybe that's true. I'll give you an update on the printer shit.
Did you get one?
No, I didn't do a damn thing, man. I didn't do a damn thing. That's not true. I didn't buy anything. I went the next day. I did some more searching around, and I looked at like Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace and Amazon, and I looked at different models, and I, you know, did some research on them and looked at things, and you know, like what model is going to work in Linux, which one's going to be easy to set up, you know, how would I have to set all this stuff up, do I want to hassle with something that's a little older, do I want something that's newer, do I want a multifunction thing which does like scanning, copying type thing. And you know what? Right. What I ended up on was, you know, I still don't know what I want to do, and the wife hasn't pushed this, and I don't fucking want a printer. I hate printers. I don't like printers. Like
me too.
Yeah, I mean, laser printer, it's great. It works, but in any kind of printer, it's just laser printer is always big and heavy. Right?
Right.
It's always heavy. And then inkjet printers.
And it makes the lights dim.
Yeah. Inkjet printers, just, I've never been happy with an inkjet printer. They're light, but I haven't been successful with one that if I'm not using it on a regular basis, it doesn't end up shit in the bed.
Right.
Within like 3 or 4 months.
Yep.
And
well,
it's like, I don't know where to put it. I got to hook it up to one of these computers down here. How's it going to work
with
Android?
Unless you get one with Wi-Fi in it, and then you don't have to, but yeah.
Yeah, so that's the thing. A lot of the stuff I saw on Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace, it's not – I don't think it has Wi-Fi on it, and they're a few years old.
granted, I was to say, what you could do is you could get a pie and then just, and then like take some double stick tape or something and stick it on the back or something. You know, one of the pies with Wi-Fi in it. That's enough to run it.
But yeah, but I mean, at that point, yeah. It would just be hooked up to the network. So,
right.
You know, it's just like a cup server.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it doesn't even have to have. It could just be hooked up to one of these systems I have down here, or even one of the pies I have down here.
Right.
You know,
true.
But then that's again where it comes back to it. Just I need to make sure it's going to work with Linux, and most laser printers will, unless they're like Canon or Brother or whatever. I forget which right. one it is. And sometimes it's like hit or miss. But if it's like HP, HP's pretty good
Find
with
the
that.
List. Yeah, HP's. I'm usually having pretty good luck with the HP. But...
Yeah. Now, on the other hand, if I wanted to go new, I can't remember the name of the brand. I never heard of the brand before. It starts with a P. They seem to be rated fairly high. And every time I look at them and say, you know, what operating systems are supported, they're like Linux is supported. Linux is supported on all their models that I've looked at. So. You know, there is that option, and it is kind of a newer mm-hmm. one, and it's like it works with Windows and Mac and Linux and Android and Chrome OS and all these things, and I'm like, whew.
Yep.
But you know, you never know until you plug it in and set it up.
Yep. Well, one thing I do know is Microsoft actually brought out some good hardware.
What's that?
Today. They actually update. They basically did all their updates to the Surfaces. The Surface Book has now been replaced with the Surface Studio. Let's see, what do they call this? Surface Laptop Studio. So it's very similar in power. Maybe, you know, of course, much more now because it's got like a GTX 3070 in it, but. So instead of making it so the screen comes off of it, they actually put a hinge in the middle of the screen so it can kind of pivot out, kind of like their studio desktop thing they had. I don't know all the pricing yet on it yet. I just saw when it came out today. So, but basically, they have Thunderbolt 4 ports on it, which means you can use an external graphics card and all that stuff. And ironically, it still doesn't ship with the pen, and now they have a new version of the pen called the Surface Slim. And kind of the interesting thing with that is it actually has haptics inside of it, so when you're writing on the screen, it actually feels like you're writing on a piece of paper, supposedly. I don't know. We'll see. They updated the Surface Pro 8, the Surface Pro 8.
And have you ever played with the Surface?
I have one. I have a Surface.
Okay.
Pro 6.
Do you have one that uses a pen?
I do.
So do you have the pen?
I do.
Now tell me. What do you lose with the Surface Pro if you don't have the pen? With the Surface, if you don't have the pen.
Gonna be honest. The most useful peripheral was the keyboard. The pen I hardly use.
Okay. I was just curious. I'm like, either the pen is like this wonderful thing that if you don't have it, it really degrades the experience, or it would seem to me to be like this Chrome Go Fast where it doesn't really matter whether you have it or not, and it's just another expensive peripheral that you break or lose. And so
my opinion on it, it's nice if you do sketching. And, of course, I didn't charge the stupid headset. Hold on, let me hook a battery up.
So it's kind of like having a tablet without a tablet. It's just right, instead of having a tablet, you just write on the Surface Pro.
Yeah. Now, the kind of cool thing about the keyboard now, for the Surface Pro 8 is the keyboard now ships with the pen with it. So you just have one additional purchase.
What's the additional purchase?
The keyboard. The keyboard don't come with it. So, I mean, once you buy the key, it's not that much extra in the grand scheme of things. So if I bought another one, another Surface Pro, and I might look at that as my replacement for the 6, because some of the important things they did with it is like I said, they put Thunderbolt ports on it. Now, if I at some point down the line, after I get it, I go and buy an external graphics card. I can hook that up to it and use that to help accelerate my renders in Premiere. So that's one thing. So now, granted,
I'm ignorant on this right. end, but on this stuff. But how much faster is Thunderbolt over USB-C?
That's a good question. I don't know their actual specifics. Specs.
I guess I should look that up.
They actually make Thunderbolt displays now, so you can just hook directly to the display with that USB-C, like, because it's essentially the same connector, all right, as USB-C. So, you can hook. I think you can hook up to four 4K displays up to it. So, or like I said, you can hook up a external graphics card, but. You know,
are these Thunderbolt 4K. What? Are these Thunderbolt 3?
4.
Oh, Thunderbolt 4.
Yep.
All right, because Thunderbolt 3 was 40 gigabits per second, whereas USB-C right. is 20 gigabits right. per second.
It's a lot. Just put it this way. It's a lot faster than USB 3.
So. I was just, like, because I remember hearing something like USB-C kind of, I thought I heard it say USB-C was like, well, then what's the point of Thunderbolt?
Right. Plus, the nice thing is, too, is if you have a USB, external battery pack that has a USB-C, you can basically bring that along to extend your thing. But anyway, that's the Surface Pro. They also brought out a new phone, the Surface Duo 2, with the Snapdragon 888 in it. And actually, I don't know if it's the first one that has it, but it actually technically has three screens. It's not one of the foldable phones. I mean, it folds, but it's actually got two different screens on either side of the fold, so there's no crease. In fact, I went to Best Buy today to get this headset, and yes, indeed, you can feel the crease on both the Z Flip and the Z Fold. And I checked the latest ones, too, not the older ones, so you know, that's really souring me on the foldables. Just
one thing, Joel. Thunderbolt.
Yes, sir?
Thunderbolt 4 does not add any speed increases.
Okay, well, yeah.
The bandwidth remains the same. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm betting it increases the power delivery, maybe, but in any event. But the neat thing they did with the Surface Duo 2 is they like I said, it has the Snapdragon 888, the up-to-date processor, which when they brought it out last year, not to say they basically had a generation-old CPU in it last year, which is kind of a dumb decision for Microsoft. But then because when you have it closed, like you can't like tell if you have a text message or anything, they added like a little strip LCD on the side of the phone, like on the hinge. So if you look at the hinge, it's like you can look at the hinge to get the time off of it. You can look and see if you're getting a phone call. You can get the phone's charge status all without opening the screens, which is kind of nice. They also, instead of doing the weird thing like the old version, they only had the external camera on the back. This one has they upgraded external camera on the back, and they have a selfie cam inside of it. So, but I've watched quite a few videos on using it, and if it was one of those ones I can get under contract for my upgrade, I would definitely consider this, mostly because I've put hands on the Samsung Folds, and I just, don't like it. But considering I never go anywhere, for me a bigger phone is not really a big problem, if you know what I mean. So the Surface Duo 2 also supports the new pen as well. They also brought an upgraded version of the Surface Pro X, which the Surface Pro X is their ARM based device, and the Surface Go 3, I think. And kind of a really cool thing they did, they brought out a kit. Actually, a couple cool things they did. One is they brought out a kit called the Microsoft Surface Adaptive Kit. So basically, what this is a series of stickers that you can have. Like, if you're a blind person, you can have a sighted person assist you, and you put the stickers on it, and it'll, like, you can put a sticker like right by where the charge cable goes, and then you have it has a sticker for that, then it feels a certain way. So that way, you when you feel that bump, hey, there's your power. There's where your power cord goes, and so on and so forth. So that's kind of nice to make the Surface devices a little bit more adaptive for those who are less able. And then, not that I need a mouse, but I might just buy one just for the heck of it, just because I want to see what it's like. But they brought out a new mouse called the Ocean Plastic Mouse. So essentially what they're doing is they make the casing for the mouse out of recycled plastic from the ocean. And because they do that, each mouse can look a little bit different. So when you buy your mouse, it's going to always look like that. So it might have different spots on it in different places. So it's kind of interesting how they did it. So, I buy it just to check that out myself, but it's made from 20% recycled ocean plastic in the packaging that's 100% recyclable. So, but that's the one thing that I haven't determined, though, with the Surface Duo, and it kind of cuts into a little bit of last week's Apple announcements, is, well, this is the second set of phones that Apple has released without a charge brick. Samsung has followed suit. It makes me wonder if Microsoft is doing the same thing. I haven't dug too much into the event, and I haven't watched anybody who's covering the whole event from cover to cover. But what do you think about phones that don't, especially if you're buying a flagship phone? You're spending like $1,200 to $1,500, and it's not shipping it with a charger inside the box. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, part of me would be like, if you're spending $1,200 for a phone, throwing in the charger can't really be that much of an expense on top of that phone, you know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
But yep. yet at the same time, I'm like, well, if I'm spending $100 for a phone, a charger ain't going to be that much more money. Why can't they? Like, what's the problem with including it?
Yep.
I mean, honestly, if I can buy,
I think it's twofold.
If I can buy a $30 MP3 player that comes with a USB right. cable, why right. can't they throw in the USB cable
right.
with the phone?
Yeah.
Or whatever charging cable that you have. I mean, they're not that expensive.
Right. I think some of it is they want to reduce the size of the box. Now, granted, I will say this, like, one thing that in Apple's chargers, like, I got one for my iPad 4, and it's a USB-C charger, but it's this basically Apple's standard USB charger. You know, like, for example, Apple always had the same kind of style of brick for their iPhones and stuff, you know. But the new ones, like anything that any of the new phones, they're shipping with they ship with a larger if you buy one, it's a larger brick. Your phone usually ships with a Lightning to USB-C cable, okay, if you buy the iPhone, okay? And part of it is they want to reduce the size of the packaging so that they, quote-unquote, save the environment, you know, let alone if you're like some of these people who buy the new iPhone every fucking year, you're not saving the environment.
I really don't think the problem with the it's not the packaging so much that's the problem. It's the
right,
components inside the phone that
right,
might be
right,
a bigger
right.
problem than the packaging. I mean,
And I will say this, some of the new charters, like, I highly recommend if you don't have one, go to Amazon and order you up some of the, like, especially if your phone is USB-C and you have USB-C to USB-C cables, buy the Anker Nano chargers, which are gallium arsenide chargers, and they're tiny. They are about the size of basically the plug, the thing that goes into your power strip. So it's not going to block your neighboring power receptacles on a six-banger power strip. And it charges really fast, too. It's fast charges both my Galaxy Note 10 Plus as well as the iPad. And so both of them will fast charge it. And that's what the newer charging technology is. And it also is cooler and uses less energy. So I highly recommend them. They're cheap.
How much
they're
are
like,
they?
$16 to $20, depending on which color you get. So it's like whenever I get a, like if I have a spare $10-$15 on the Amazon gift card, I just get another Nano or Nano Pro.
What is that called? The Nano Charger?
Yeah, Anker. It's the same as the battery company. Anker Nano or Nano Pro.
Okay.
The Nano Pro is probably the new version of the Nano. But yeah, it does fast charging on all of my phones. So,
Okay.
They're tiny. I mean, I love them.
What's the difference between the iPhone one and everything else? Like,
I don't think there is one. It's just a USB-C.
Yeah.
That's all. I mean that's
well,
it.
It's just a USB plug, isn't it? You know, you just plug
USB-C.
USB.
Yeah, there's
it's just a plug
specific.
That you plug. Does it even come with a cable?
No, it doesn't come with a cable.
Oh, those cheap bastards. They couldn't throw in a cable with it, too.
You know what, though? Just buy the Powerline 2 cables. They're better than a cheap cable anyway.
Well, you know, the way you're talking, you're just making a case for them not including the charger and the cable in the phone anymore.
In some cases,
so you
yeah,
go and buy but... this.
Well, actually, I think that's Anker just taking advantage of the fact that Apple doesn't do it anymore. And it's cheaper, like to buy the Apple equivalent, I think you're looking at least 30.
Well, I mean, that would say to me probably one of the other reasons they don't want to include the charger is they can upsell you on the charger. You know, oh, well, this doesn't come with a charger, but, you know, for $40, we'll throw the charger in.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's Apple, it's for another $100, you get the ultra super fast Apple charger.
Yep. Yeah, for just a little bit more, too. Now, those are the 20-watt ones. And for just a little bit more, you can get the 65-watt one for $49, and they're just a tiny bit bigger than the Nanos. But, in fact, these must be so popular, they sell them in 3-packs. You know, you get an Anker 3-pack of that charger, the 20-watt one, for $30. So you can buy 3 chargers, or you can buy 1 Apple charger. So, anyway, I still think that people should put a charger. And another thing, too, is wireless charging is cool, but it still sucks compared to plugging your phone into a cable. Any time I've ever used a wireless charger, the charge rate is ridiculously slow.
On the wireless charger?
Yep.
I've never used a wireless charger.
I have. I actually have a battery pack I picked up at Sam's Club. It's like either 5,000 or 10,000 milliamp hours. It's not very big. It's not big as big as my bigger ones, but it has a wireless the wireless coil built into it. So basically, the battery actually has suction cups on one side of the battery, you put that towards your phone, and if your phone has wireless charging, it will wirelessly charge. However, it does not charge fast. I mean, it might be okay to like slap it on that and then throw that in your car's console as you drive or something, and then by the time you get to where you're going, it might be charged depending on how long your drive is, of course. But yeah, you know, I really don't like the wireless charging of the times I've tried it. My son likes it, and actually one reason I like it mostly for him is because he breaks his fucking charge port all the time. So if the
He's breaking the charger or breaking the port, on the phone? On the phone?
Port usually. On the phone, yeah.
So what you have to do? You have to get a new phone?
That's what happened last time. It happened. But I pay the extra for the Verizon's phone coverage, like the Verizon warranty thing, so that at worst I have to pay like a copay, which is still cheaper than a brand new phone.
Right.
But and then one time right after he got it, he actually broke the screen on it. Like pretty quickly. And I don't know how, but and they actually the company that takes care of that, it's through Asurion. They actually came out and fixed his screen, so he still had the same phone until the charge port broke.
They came out to your place and fixed it?
Yep. Did.
Did you watch him do it?
Yep. Yep. And whoa. I know I don't want to do it.
Wow, I never heard of a place that comes out to fix the phone.
I didn't either, but that's what they said they did. Like, sure. And they did it. So it's like, but generally though, you know, and the one thing I do need to do is I may, since I have the time off tomorrow, I may take a trip down to the Verizon store. My phone and my son's phone both have 5G built into it, but we never turned it on. So one day I was looking at my plan on the app and the phone, and it says that, at least from what I was seeing there, it said my plan included 5G, and I'm like, well, I've never seen it light up. So I might go in, and the reason maybe is because of how 5G works. It's not, you know, it's kind of more like a Wi-Fi access point than it is cell phone. But I'm hazarding the guess, though, that as Grove City is a little bit nicer section of town, of you know, it's a little nicer suburb, we could have enough 5G all around us, and that might be why my 4G reception is horrible. We had a power outage earlier this week. It was on Saturday, right before the football game. Pissed me off, but anyway, I have one bar on my phone. It's like I've never had reception that bad on Verizon. But either way, I want to talk to them and find out, you know, is there a problem with my phone, or is it just that Wi-Fi or 4G sucks in Grove City? Or do I need a 5G SIM? Which you know, if it's part of my plan now, if you just added it to everyone's plan by this point, then I want to make sure that I can actually use it if I'm near an access point. So, I still don't know. I'm not far off of wanting to get a new phone. My phone's still pretty darn good, but new phones are even better now. So it's a little crazy how fast things are. It's like it ramped up again. I don't know why. A lot of the new phones are just so much faster. Maybe it's because I'm doing more on my phone. I don't know. Because I do find myself doing things on my phone that I never thought I would do. Like watching videos all the time. Watch videos on your phone, Dan?
Yeah, I do. You got sideload Pornhub, right? No, can you get Pornhub on your phone? I'm sure it's a browser, man. Well, I don't know. I've never gone to Pornhub on my phone. I watch YouTube on occasion on my phone and stuff. I use it a lot for reading.
I more frequently will there's some YouTube channels that the real content is really the audio, not the video. It's just them sitting in front of a camera. It's like, do I really need to see that while I'm hearing what he's saying?
Probably not. Kind of stuff. That's kind of lame.
Yeah. So then, since I have the premium, if I'm doing other stuff on the phone while I'm listening, I'll just bring that other app and it shrinks the video down to the little square, you know? And then one of the icons is a little headphone icon. If I tap that, the window goes away. And then I can do other stuff full screen on my phone while I'm listening. And I can also, in many cases, just turn the screen completely off and just listen to the YouTube. Because there's some things like live streams that I'll just listen to. I don't really need to see the video to get the point. You know, so a lot of times I'll do that, but it's amazing how much I do on my phone. Like, I control my bed with it. I set the alarm for the house with it. It also will turn off my alarm system when I get close to the house. Which is pretty nifty. If you do ask me, that way the family can just pile out of the car and then head right in, and they don't have to worry about the system going off.
Dun dun! It's making you lazy, huh? Back in the old days, you had to punch in a code. Now you just walk.
Well, and I can use it for my TV too. You know, like, because I have all my TV, like my TV, my son's TV, and the one in the living room. I'll have Roku's built into it, so I just pick which one I want to control, and I have a remote with me all the time.
That's one of the annoying things is we have our TVs are really old,
right?
So they're still good, but they're like over a decade old. And so this is all before smart TVs. And luckily, I still have the remote for the TV in the living room. But you can't turn that TV on and off with the remote because that power button's no longer working. And then the one we have in the bedroom, the remote doesn't work at all anymore. And it's like I've been like, well, I should probably just get a universal remote,
right?
And then that'll fix the problem. But every universal remote I've ever had has always been hit or miss. Yeah,
right.
And I'm like, or do we just buy a whole new TV? You know?
Yeah.
But you know, I don't. And I'm like,
you know, because I paid $300 for a 4K TV.
And I'm so it's like Now what I do in the bedroom is I just get up and turn the TV on or off. But they made it so like the controls on the TV are on the front and they're just like it's a black panel, and it's just like the black plastic has just a little bit raised.
Right.
Of where it says like power. Power and then the volume buttons and stuff like that. So I absolutely cannot see these buttons. Like I know, right? Even with the light on, I can't see them. Like pure daylight, I can get up there and see it. But
and I don't think that's entirely because we're getting old. Because we are getting old.
Yeah. But. Well, that contributes. Like I have to go over there with my phone, turn the flashlight on, shine it on there, start looking at it. Yep. If I got my contacts in, forget it. If I'm wearing my glasses, forget it. Unless I'm wearing my wife's old lady glasses that magnify reading. My near vision is just atrocious. Like, if I'm not wearing glasses or contacts, I can see everything fine. But the moment I put on my glasses or contacts, my near vision is just shot to hell. I need bifocals, and I hate that.
Yes, you do. Yeah. And they're not, you know... No bifocals I have ever had have lines in them. So, I mean, nobody can really tell that they're bifocals. Only you can.
It's so, just, I guess part of me is like, I don't know. I've never used bifocals, but I'm like, is part of your vision then, like, bizarre? Like,
well, okay. The way it works is when you, like, look, just like, say you're standing up and you just look straight ahead, that's looking through the distance. Okay. Right. So when you're reading, you're usually like, say you're like when you're reading your Kindle or holding your phone or something, you're usually pointing your head down. So then your eyes kind of automatically align with the right part of the lens. I thought it would be a pain in the ass at first, but it's actually quite easy because it's kind of normal the way they design them. So, and then of course, then some of them, depending on, like mine are. I think mine are straight up bifocals, or I don't know if they're progressive, as in that it progressively gets closer as I gaze down. So if I'm like halfway between the center of the lenses and the bottom of the lens, if it's not as close as normal for you know, like for example, if I'm reading something like on a store shelf or something, right. You know, I don't really notice. It's for me, it's natural. And it's just because I'm kind of used to it. Now, what I do know is two pairs ago, not only did I get a normal set of bifocals, but the eye doctor gave me a set of computer glasses. And so what those are is they're set for the distance that I sit away from my screens, at least for my work screens, okay? So and they also have a coating on them to help filter some of the blue light. Now, the one thing I noticed, and I caught myself doing all the time, especially when I lived at our old house. The old house, it was nothing for me to go jump in a car, go drive over to Taco Bell, grab lunch, and head back, okay? But I had a bad habit because I was putting my computer glasses on. I would forget... that I had them on, and I'd walk out, and all of a sudden I'd be blinded because there's no tint on them whatsoever. I mean, there's a tint for the blue light, but unlike my bifocals, I get the photo grays. So basically, they'll automatically get darker. Okay, so I walked out, and I was just like, whoa! And then I started driving. It wasn't until I actually started driving that I realized, oh shit, Joel, you still got your computer glasses on. So I said, do I want to turn around and go get my bifocals? I'll just do it. I just went over and got my food and went back. But I used to do that all the time. I don't as much anymore, but I definitely. It's not bad getting used to them. I mean, it's, you know, you think it would be, but it's not. I mean, you know, and I think you can get bifocal contacts as well too, I think, but no, I wouldn't want to do contacts because my eyes always get dry too. So I mean, I don't think I'd want to mess with contacts because my eyes are always doing something, and I probably end up rubbing them out.
I wear contacts all the time, and I do have those. They're not bifocal, but they're striated, so it's kind of like bifocal. That if you are looking distance, it uses that, but if you are reading something close up, it's supposed to adjust with the striations to act like they're bifocal, and it worked pretty well. But it seems like every 3 years, my prescription is changing just a little bit.
Yep.
Particularly for near vision, that it's not working for me anymore. Not well at all. It's not man, if I go into a store, I can't read the labels for shit on that stuff anymore. If I have my contacts on and I'm not using like reader glasses, it's just getting old sucks.
Yep, it does. It does.
It's
that's, you know, a lot of people say, well, why do you need an iPad? You got the big giant phone. It's like, I have the big giant phone because I can't see shit on the little phone.
Can't read the little phone anymore.
It's like, you know, it's like one rumor I saw that, you know, Apple last time, well, I think they've only brought it out twice so far, but they brought out mini versions of their phones because people were like, what happened to the phone sizes? Like they were like during the iPhone 4 and iPhone 5. People wanted the little ones because they were nice to just operate it with one, you know, basically hold it in your hand and use your thumb to navigate around, you know. But so they made the iPhone 13 mini. They had the 12 mini last time too, and I saw a rumor that says that this might be the last iPhone mini. And I'm like, well, you know, first off, that's a rumor, and I never say never when it comes to Apple. But ironically, you know, if you talk about the two events, this week's event with Microsoft and Apple's event, the more exciting one was actually Microsoft's. Apple is just playing it safe with all their stuff. And, you know, they're I'm not saying that some of their stuff ain't amazing, because it is, but it's kind of meh, you know. Because, like, the Apple Watch is, by far, I'll say, it's probably one of the best smartwatches there is. But I'll never buy one because I don't want to have to carry my work phone with me all the time. And I don't want to switch to an iPhone for my phone. But, and Apple, of course, won't make the Apple Watch work with anything but iPhone. So, you know, that's one huge thing I have a problem with. And Link and I were talking about this again. It's like, you know, why do I have an iPad? I have an iPad because, one, I'm old and I need something with a bigger screen sometimes. two, I just like you, just like Link, we've spent money on buying Android devices and only had maybe a year to 6 months worth of support, and that's it. And we're tired of it. At least I am. I won't. Unless somebody brings out, like, about the only way I do it is if Samsung brought one out that didn't cost as much as an iPad. And right now, their stuff costs as much as iPad, so I'm figuring if I'm spending that amount of money, I might as well get the iPad. I don't know. You know, so it's frustrating. I'm just frustrated that doesn't seem like any Android maker can make a phone, or, well, not, they can make phones well, but they can't make a freaking tablet that'll last longer than a year support wise. It's just, you know, I won't buy something that I'm gonna have a lot of personal data on, and I won't get any security updates past a year.
You could look at the Jide, man. That was a perfect example right there.
Right. Spent, what, $300 on that thing, and if I still had it, it would be a paperweight, because I don't think I could run anything new on it. I don't think I could. Well, let's see. You know, yeah, that'd be about 5-6 year old by now. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, well, you know, we're getting ready to go. It's fall. This day is the first day of fall. Getting ready to start. I want to say it now. If you're going to buy something special for someone for Christmas this year, buy it now. Buy it now before everybody else starts shopping, because there's going to be shortages on a lot of things. Especially if it's a gaming system or anything with chips in it.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
Where's Joe?
I don't know, but I guess it's getting kind of late, so I better bring this up now, or I'm not going to bring it up. Are you familiar with the Amico?
Amico.
The Intellivision Amico.
Oh yes, I talked a little bit last show.
Okay, so I've read an article over on Kotaku about the Amico. I've been familiar with the Amico for about a year now, at least a year. I saw the videos that they put out for this thing, and my first impression was nobody that I knew liked Intellivision when it came out. Why the hell would I want one now? And looking at the games that they were proposing for this, I was like, man, it's just, I don't know.
You tempted?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No, absolutely not. Now, I read this article over on Kotaku. The title of it is "The New Gaming Console That's Become a Giant Car Crash Explained." Talking about the Amico. So apparently, it was supposed to be like between $150 and $180, that was the price point. The games were going to be about $8 a piece, and they were supposed to be exclusive to the Intellivision. And the whole point of this was to give you that alternative to the casual gamer, that they could play multiplayer couch games with their friends like back in the old days, right? I guess in banking on that. And now it's like $250 to $300. The games are that they're showing and stuff like that aren't exclusives. They're old mobile games and everything that are coming out. And so it's really not looking like a great thing. And apparently the CEO, the guy who's behind this, is a real asshole. And in this day and age, I don't know why anybody that would be a head of a company would actually go online and fight people who criticize their product and say, this really isn't that great what you're selling.
And
blah,
he's
blah,
doing
blah.
That?
And he's out there and he's bad. You know, he's calling them haters and doing all the wrong things that you shouldn't do. Like, and he just can't quit being an asshole about it. But I'm like, you know, when I looked at this, I'm like, here is this quote retro counts console that the only thing I think that they were maybe going down the right path on was that there were going to be games that you could buy online, like a store or whatever,
the console,
digital
right?
purchases that you can purchase for games. So I'm like, I look at these things and I'm like, you know, who wants a damn Intellivision? Like Intellivision, when it came out, it was sandwiched between the Atari 2600, was at the same time as the ColecoVision, which was a far superior system, I thought, than the television.
Yes, it was.
And then came Sega and Nintendo and kicked Intellivision's ass. It just seems like and I'm like, well, none of these retro console systems seem like a really good idea, except like the Nintendo ones that came out, and even those,
right,
like
the small ones.
Yeah, for me, I'm like, hey, it looks great, but
now that
really,
I finally get to be on the show, I get to jump in here because that's one of my favorite topics. Yeah, buying a dedicated computer or system for retro gaming is kind of silly because you can just repurpose one of these other systems for retro gaming. I mean, a Nintendo Switch?
Yep.
How perfect is that?
Yep.
Hold on.
And it's for perfect ports too.
What I'm saying is, like, I'm trying to figure, like, I look at this Amco and I'm like, who is there? There's obviously there's probably some market. Like, people went crazy over the Nintendo mini consoles, and to me they were interesting. But when you look at it, for the price that you're going to pay, you could do it yourself and get a far better. Yeah,
right.
But then again, they're not selling that to me. So,
I don't, I still. They're selling it to 40-year-old guys that never got into electronics.
Or they did. It's like, oh, hey, I remember playing a television at my friend's house. Yeah.
And I can't imagine anybody had a good experience playing in television anywhere.
That's probably true.
Yeah. I'll tell you this, though. One of the best arcade ports ever of Donkey Kong came on guess which system? Not in television.
Commodore 64.
Not the Atari. No, the ColecoVision.
ColecoVision was pretty good.
Yeah, the ColecoVision, it actually shipped with the Donkey Kong. You can listen to more about that on Living in the Shade of an 80s Arcade on Saturday, because that's what the episode's going to be about. Yeah, I'm talking about the ColecoVision, yeah. The ColecoVision, which then began... Now, the ColecoVision also helped bring along the Coleco Atom computer. That's the computer where if you had your game cassette, you know, which were magnetic tape, loaded into the console, when you turned it on, it would wipe the tape. So, I mean, Coleco, you know, is the ColecoVision was probably the only thing they had that was worth anything. Because it was good, plus they had the expansion port that let you play 2600 games on it. But it was an underrated console. It was a good console. It had really good graphics for the time.
How well did it play the 2600 games? Because that would have really expanded its usefulness.
Yep, that's a good question. I think that's part of the reason why they bought it. Because, like I said on the show, I said, you know, the kids that got the ColecoVision weren't the cool kids because everybody else had Atari and we were the cool kids.
you know? I don't know, man. When I got my ColecoVision, I was like, this beats the shit out of the Atari 2600.
The only thing that was bad about the ColecoVision was that plastic controller.
It was better really than the television idea. Controller.
That well, that's not saying much,
but
yeah. I mean, as simple as the Atari joystick was, it for the time until Nintendo brought out the gamepad, it was the best controller. Period.
I agree with you on that.
But it's like you know the. you got to think about it. See. Before it was Coleco Inc., it was Connecticut Leather Company. So, I mean, this is before they started making toys and the Cabbage Patch Kids and all that stuff. And now it's defunct. But
you know, here's a question. Because I was thinking about this. And, like, with looking at the Amico, the idea of playing couch-based multiplayer games with your friends... Did anybody ever create like a dock for a phone that you could just slide your phone in and have controllers sync up with it to play games on your TV?
Sort of, but not really.
No, not the Switch. Yeah.
Sort of, but not really. I mean, it's still very DIY, but they do make USB-C docks, and there were even. USB micro docks that had USB ports on them. And then if you're running emulation and you're basically DIY, nobody sold that specifically.
Because I'm surprised. I mean, I think that might be something people would buy. Although I guess that comes in as like, is it going to support,
right.
You're running this phone support problems.
Yeah. And people buy the, like the controllers that you can slide your phone into and use that way.
Right.
It's still a bit of a niche market, so they're expensive for what they are. But, compatibility can be a major issue on those and quality.
Then the Atari VCS is shipping, which is the new modern version of the Atari. Which new and pro version of the Atari controller and the gamepad for $399.
Yeah, that's about $370 more than I would spend on something that would play old Atari games.
Well, that's the thing, is it doesn't play just old Atari games. It also actually can run Ubuntu, I think.
Right.
Look in the Raspberry Pi.
Yeah. It just seems like over. Like, it doesn't
feels like the Ouya.
Yeah, it's an underpowered system that if I got it, it would be like the main purpose is to run the Atari games, but I could do other things with it, just not very well. When you said using the Switch as a retro game system, did you mean using the Switch and what it provides for retro gaming, or
either way, it? I mean, you can hack it and put the homebrew scene on there, and you get a lot more functionality out of it, and a lot more games will play on it. But they also have their own market for older games. So
yeah, they do. I was just curious whether you were talking. I see, and I would.
I know what I would always do, and then. That's, you know, I'm going to be running homebrew on it if I have one.
Well, I would probably go and buy things like there's the, I know there's a collection, quite a few collections on there of retro games, and I would just do that. But, I mean, granted, it's not quite the same as playing with the same controls, you know, the old controllers like we used to have, but.
Yeah, my only problem, like, I look at that with running, like, I putting homebrew on the Switch, it's like, once you do that, you can't go back to the, you can't go back, though, can you?
Yeah, you want to play the other stuff, yeah.
Like, you
I'm sure you can, once you've put a custom ROM on it, why couldn't you just put the stock ROM back on it?
I don't know how easy.
I mean, you can do that with the PSP. I don't have a Switch to tell you, oh yeah, that you can do that. But with most things, once you put a custom ROM on it, you can turn around and put the stock ROM back on it. Now, there is some exception there with like an Android device where they have the bootloader locked down, and if you unlock it, then it might count depending on which method you use to unlock it, but then that only really affects your warranty.
Right.
I see you got Atari Flashback Classics for the Switch is like $40, but you get like a bunch of games. Like you get like Tempest and Missile Command and looks like Pole Position maybe.
Well, I see Mordency is in the listening booth. Hey, Mordency, expect a package.
There you go. See, the one thing I wished on the Nintendo website that I could actually see the whole list of games. But they're not the only one. There's ones in there. I think Namco has one in there. Because I don't know about you, Dan, modern games, I just don't have the time to churn.
I play a little too many modern games, I would say.
Yeah, but here you go. Namco Museum Volume 1 is $5. And it's got Galaxian, Pac-Man, Xevious, Mappy, Dig Dug, Tower of Druaga, Sky Kid, Dragon Buster, Dragon Sprint, The New Legend, Splatterhouse, Wanpaku Graffiti, Pac-Man Championship Edition.
Too many to mention.
Yep.
Morton C, were you about to say something? Is that why you jumped in the channel?
There you go.
You cut out a little bit. I didn't hear what you said. Something package?
Yeah, expect a package.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Yep. And then the 2 package has Namco Museum 2 has Galaga, Battle City, Pac-Land, Dig Dug 2, Super Xevious, Mappy Land, Legacy of the Wizard, Rolling Thunder, Dragon Buster 2, Mendel Palace, and Gut Plus. So, I mean, you can play all that stuff on a Switch. I think what actually would make those ones even better is if you could play it in an odd orientation for the Switch, like up and down. Because that's how all those games originally were. But you got that, or then you also have the arcade 1-ups. And see, the only thing with me with the arcade 1-ups is, you know, like, to buy one I want, like, one of the ones I'd like is the Star Wars one, and it's $500. It really only has the three games on it, and that's it. And then I looked at the Arcade Legend thing that's back at Sam's Club. I was there over the weekend, and they had it there. And I just look at the collection of the games that you can play out of on it. And, you know, it's the thing is I want something where I don't have to sit there for hours futzing with the controls just so I can play an old game of Pac-Man or something, you know? But, eh.
Yeah. I'm looking at the Nintendo Switch homebrew guide, and it doesn't look that tough, but they say the risk you run is your console could get permanently banned for certain behaviors.
And there you go.
Yeah. And most of it's like piracy and installing homebrew NSP files.
Which is probably what I'd do, and then get permanently banned, right, and be perfectly okay with it. I mean, I'll handle my own updates, I'll put my own games on. I'll be fine with it. But that's me. I'm not big on the whole playing online.
Yeah. I'm not either, because usually when I play online, play someone online, I get my ass kicked.
Exactly. I don't have all the time to dedicate that most people that play an online game have to just sit there and become experts at it.
Yep. I'd rather just fire up my Atari 800 XL. Play me some Star Raiders and some Dig Dug. They're not the best ports for the Dig Dug, but it's still pretty fun.
So you got anything, Joe, before we got to wrap this up?
Not really. I mean, I'm sorry that, you know, I didn't get to be on more of the show, but
that's all takes
precedent.
It's all right.
Work comes first. Work, family work comes first.
Yep, work and family.
All right. I guess we got to wrap this up. We'll be here next week. Today's first day of fall, isn't it? You said that, Joel, didn't you?
It is.
First day of fall. Damn. Summer went by just like that. All right. Thanks a lot, everybody. Hopefully things will back off at work for you, Joe, and you won't have to be up all night or whatever. And I'm moving your daughter's audio out of the questionable location and putting it somewhere else.
Oh, thank you.
So hopefully it won't be that bad. So here we go.
I'm short.
I am short.
Oh my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called Libre. I talk about Linux and
general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
While you were making Apu Young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
I looked at a Galaxy Fold, the Fold 3 today. Yeah, I'm not excited about that.
What's the price tag on that?
If you're still there, Joe.
Yeah, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Joel can't hear me, though.
Well, maybe his headphones went out again.
Huh? That's weird.
Joel, you can't hear us?
See you, Dan.
Can you, Joel! Joel, you can't hear us?
I can hear you. Oh, he's gone.
He
now.
Left. He was like, F those guys.
Right? They were talking to me.
Yeah, that was really weird.
Yeah.
I don't know why it all of a sudden stopped for him.
Yeah, I was going to ask him about that. I wanted to get some details.
On the Fold?
Yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't impressed by it. He wasn't saying he wasn't impressed by it. But he didn't go into too much more detail.
Yeah.
I don't know how much it is, so.
Galaxy Z Fold 3 5G. I don't want to log in. I want to look at the damn phone.
Bum bum.
Excellent for videos. Oh, $2,000. Oh, that's for the Z Fold 2. I'll go to Samsung, see what they say there. Fold 3 5G. Oh, this is only... only $900. And you can get it in the 256 or the 512 gig. 512 gig costs $100 more. Which is about, you know... right price range for that. Three screens.
Still out of my price range.
No, I'll spend that much on a phone, but I spend like all day on my phone.
Right.
Well, I don't know if I'll do it for this one. I'll wait and see what people say about the durability of the Fold on it. And if I wait 6 months, it'll drop in price.
Pick it up on the used market.
Pick it up on the used market if I really want to, but probably not. I probably will wait another year before I pick up a phone. At least another year.
You're like on permanent vacation all the time, aren't you?
Don't they wish? No.
What made you decide to take 3 days off, like, now?
Because I had time to use. And I figured out I'm not going to use them all by the end of the year, so I might as well just take some time.
Oh, so you still have a lot more to use up?
Yeah, I'm taking a week in October, and I'm taking some time around Thanksgiving and Christmas, but... I still had some to eat up after that, so.
Yeah, I got to start putting in my vacation time for the end of the year. I got a lot.
Oof. Yep.
Yeah, I ended up with a lot because that the brigantine trip I took was from my father-in-law's funeral, so that was all bereavement, and it doesn't count towards your vacations yeah. or anything. And I've only used like 2 or 3 days so far this year, and I got a lot more I got to use up.
Yep. I really needed a break, too, because I was just burnt out. That, and I completely forgot that I'm supposed to go to Bible study tonight. Oh, well. I skipped it. No biggie.
Wait a minute.
So I went and bought this new headset that I'm using tonight. My other one started to not charge.
Do you guys, does your work, where you guys work, do they just give you a lump of hours that you use as you see fit, and those would include like vacation and sick time all lumped together?
No.
Oh, okay.
So you have separate. I do have separate. Yeah.
Okay, because I don't. They just say, here's here's like all your time, and if you need to take sick days, it comes out of that, or holidays, vacations, or whatever. Not holidays. Like there's like 3 floating holidays. They give you 2 or 3 or something like that, and then what used to be separate vacation and sick days, they just put them all together and said, there you go.
No, I have separate. In fact, I could have got an extra week this year, too, but again, I'm just not one of those people that just take Like, I know people that go on cruises and take actual real vacations, I won't say I don't do that. Just in the last year and a half, I really haven't.
You're not going to take yourself a cruise?
I don't actually have no desire to do that.
You're not going to take a vacation? I would like to take a vacation. I just got no place, like an official vacation.
Right. But
taking all these kids someplace is expensive as hell.
Well, that's true, too. Well, that's like, I don't know.
So they could go to grandma's house. That's a vacation right there.
Right. Well, see, the other thing, too, is because Christmas falls weird this year, falls on a weekend, we always get Christmas Eve off, okay? But Christmas is on, what, Saturday? So they actually give us the 27th off for Christmas Day. So they give us an extra day for that. So it's like, and the same thing goes with Thanksgiving, is we always have Thursday and Friday off. So it's like, I'm going to be out for the entire week, but 2 of those days are days that don't count. So, for that week, I use 3 days. So it's like, unless I actually point, like, now next year I may go down to Southeast Linux Fest if it actually happens again. Or MRF, MRF did happen this year. I just completely forgot to go sign up for it and plan for it. But then, this house stuff, took a lot of time too. And definitely, like last year, this time last year, that I ate up a ton of time with just getting the move and taking time off around the cleaning the house up and finalizing the sale. So it's just like the last 2 years are just having that time, with the pandemic.
Is all of this happening this year, isn't it?
It is actually. I've misplaced. Oh wait, no, I do have it. I do have the announcement, so we can talk about it on the show.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
It is happening.
Yeah.
It is happening. Right now,
December.
Even though I'm here,
early December.
Wait a minute. Let me see. Isn't, when you go to their website.
Is it that late? I thought it would have been.
Yeah, they're doing it in December. Like the first week of December, I think.
Oh, because I saw...
Oh, that's
I saw
a bad month for it, too.
Oh, everybody's off? I saw your email
about
it,
I'm not off
it,
the entire Joel. Month.
No, you can take some of it off. But you don't even need to be off to go to OLF. You live right there.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to go.
Wait, I thought you sent an email depends. About this. What?
I did. I forwarded it to you.
Wait, but where did it go? I saw it.
Oh. So you're having the same problem.
Oh, I'm here having. It is. Yeah. There's too much email.
I guess it's just going to depend on how I feel when registration. I don't know. Let's see. This is kind of confusing. It says, Ohio Linux First reemerges as a hybrid conference, open, Libre free. I guess it's December 3rd and 4th, but I don't know if it's a new conference name. Maybe? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I was looking for it in the body. I was like, wait, where's the date? It's in the subject.
Yeah, that's kind of where, December 3rd and 4th, it's current on their website.
We should start the show.
OLFconference.com, there you go.
We should start the show because that's why Joe is here. He's like, start the show, Ray, so we talk about who's on the show because I'm not going to go to OLF because that's too long of a drive. Right, Joe? Is he even there? What's he doing? They got him. Oh, he's on call. He'll join in a few. There we go. We can talk about this before we talk about other things. I got something to say, Joel. Here we go.
Go for it.
Wait. I guess it would be helpful. This is 9:23. Be helpful to make sure I know what episode this is.